Welcome to Mind Styling, the podcast that explores how we can win at the game inside our heads and make a mark on this world in our own unique style, on our own terms.
We interview entrepreneurs and leaders who aren't afraid to push the boundaries and set their own definitions of success. We will share with you the tips and techniques they use to style their mind and give you the tools you need to start mind styling for yourself.
Hello, Mind Stylist, and welcome to another episode of Mind Styling. I'm Dr. Becky Sage.
And I'm Amy Armstrong.
And we are delighted today to be joined by Misa Mink, an award-winning women's empowerment activist and founder and chief doer at Driven Women, a fast-growing empowerment platform and a global community for ambitious women who want to achieve their goals and aspirations. She's a serial entrepreneur who started her career in marketing and branding, building a successful branding agency network for one of the world's leading advertising giants. She's been involved in various startups as an investor, advisor, and a founder. Misa, welcome to Mind Styling.
Thank you. Thank you. So exciting to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you here. I know I've felt very positive every time we've had an opportunity to talk and interact. So I'm so happy that we've been able to get you here on the podcast for more people to be able to listen to your stories. So that leads me on to the first question and a perfect place to start. Could you tell us a bit more about Driven Women and your entrepreneurial journey up to this point?
Oh, thank you. You ladies, you have such a good vibes here. Very good energy always. When I listen to this episode, so I'm so excited to share my journey, which started as an entrepreneur, started over 15 years ago when I was working in one of the leading branding agencies in the UK, and I got a call from TBWA, which is one of the big advertising networks. And they wanted me to come and start design business for them. And I went to the interview and they offered me a job. And I was like, oh, that's great. I have a job. I don't need a job. You know, if I'm going to build a branding agency for you, then I want to be made a partner. So they said, oh, this is very difficult. Oh, that we can't do that because we're part of Omnicom and it's listed in New York Stock Exchange and it's against the rules. And I'm like, okay, sorry, guys. And I hopped on a plane and I came back to London. And because I really didn't need a job, I had a fantastic job. And 10 months later, the phone rings again. Those were probably the days when we still had like real phones, right? Definitely, there was no iPhones. I remember that was like sort of mid-2000s. And they'd gone to get the permission. So I was able to get some stock in the business. So I guess that would be more sort of an intrapreneur, because of course it's easier to start a business when you are surrounded by, you know, you have the facilities, the venue. I got a couple of designers straight on from, you know, who were kind of graphic designers working in the advertising agency already. So, and there were, you know, people who do the salaries and accounting and, you know, all of that stuff is taken care of. So I was able to focus on what I was good at, which was, you know, creating great branding and selling. So that thing became quite successful, actually. And I opened offices all across, all in four countries in Europe. And I did that for 4.5 years. And then I left and I sold my shares.
Oh, how satisfying.
The exciting part. So if I had not asked, I would have just had a job, a nice salary. So that gave me a little bit of sort of chips to put back into the entrepreneurial game and learn more as an entrepreneur. And that allowed me to invest and as an angel investor and get involved with other startups and lose all that money eventually, but hey. And also I started a fashion tech company, which then later on, I gave up because also that time I started Driven Women as a side project. So I had just had my babies, who are now 11. I have twin boys.
Oh, fun.
And that kind of gave me a fantastic break to really think, okay, I had this brilliant branding career. I built this agency. What do I want to do next? And I think it's better when people stick to what they know and they just do the same thing all their lives. But I'm not built that way, unfortunately. So I was like, okay, what can I do that I haven't done before? It's a design flaw. So eventually I then really investigated what I'm really passionate about, because I used to build other people's brands. So I said, okay, Misa, what would you build if you built something that was based on who you are? What do you believe in? Your passions, your values, your personality, your talents. And that's how Dream Woman was born. It was just a lovely little side project to support women to their goals. We had one group, like a support group in a co-working space in Soho in London. And I had all of these other things that I was involved in and that kept me busy. And over the years, it just started growing and more people came in and they wanted to start their own groups. And I started getting inquiries from Switzerland and Finland and different places and New Zealand even. So I ran events and this opened these groups in Singapore and all sorts of places. And then at some point I had to really look at my kind of portfolio of things I was doing and say, okay, right, Misa, you got to get real. You know, what is it that something has to give? And then at that time I took on two co-founders who had launched very successfully in Switzerland. And I said, okay, Dream Woman, that's where my heart belongs and everything else must go. So really had to make a big choice there. And that was end of 2017. And then 2018, we raised money on Crowdcube to scale the groups, which we were running at the time, which then later on led to our decision that actually it wasn't that scalable. We still have groups, but the scalable piece became Online Academy, which is basically, it's a social platform that combines the benefits of life coaching and community. So really kind of a safe space for women, where women can come together, share their journey, share their struggles. And we have personal development modules that help you figure out, you know, what do I really want from my life? You know, what do I want to build? You know, like I was back then, it's like, what is it that I really want to build? Really simple exercises, which always prompt you to say, okay, what am I going to do about it? So the taking action piece is really key, because I think way too often we overcomplicate and overthink and overanalyze and over this and over that. And then we don't actually move forward and we don't get the learning which is out there for us. So it's become an absolutely fantastic global community. And yeah, that's where I'm at today.
What a journey you have had, Misa. Isn't it fantastic? And continuing. I'm really interested in the taking action piece. The branding, all the things that I've done to research before we've come along, it was always about taking action, moving forward, driven woman. It says it in the name, doesn't it?
It does.
It sounds as if you have, but have you always been someone who has been able to take action, or have there been blocks that have held you back at times?
I've always been able to take action. Yeah. And I think it doesn't mean that I've always taken the right action. Quite the contrary. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest, my biggest areas of development has been to not take action. Because oftentimes I dig myself into a hole because I've gone so fast in one direction. But I have always followed my intuition and trusted that I can leave things behind and then something else will happen. So, there is that drive. But I think what Dream Woman has taught me is that not to take action is equally important. Just to be and just let ideas and the natural rhythm of doing things emerge rather than just always like pushing and doing too much. So it has slowed me down, interestingly enough.
Yeah, I think that's really fascinating. And I wonder if some of that is, comes to this point of you being a serial entrepreneur and having gone through many steps along the way. Because I think when you're, when people are very good at doing that, you know, moving forward, moving quickly, being focused, taking the reins, actually, we don't slow down unless we've got a reason to slow down, and kind of forcing ourselves to slow down can sometimes be really hard. So what was it that's enabled you to kind of realize the power of slowing down or not taking action? And how do you do that actually when you are somebody who's naturally going, I want to keep going, I want to move forward quickly, I want to, you know, take the reins? Are there things that you can do to ground yourself and just hold back a little bit?
I love that question. And I'm going to share a couple of stories. So firstly, the only thing that slowed me down at the time was my twin boys. So I don't think if I didn't have twin boys, if I just had like a one baby, I would have just plowed on. But it was just so exhausting. And they were so energetic that they absolutely drained every drop of energy out of me. And recovering from the whole thing took like 1.5 years, literally, like, just to like, yeah, we're not going to even go in there. But that forced me to slow down and to stop and to assess. But I think in sort of more recently, and I guess my action taking is also good, because always when I hit a roadblock, when I hit a wall, and we all do this in our life journeys, entrepreneurial journeys, whatever journeys you go, I mean, it's just part of life. I have become better in reassessing and really slowing down, rather than I used to hit the walls like real speed. Whereas now I'm seeing when I'm kind of overstepping my speed, and I'm allowing that space for myself all the time. So for instance, this year, so I will always make a vision board for myself for each year, and they have become less and less and calmer and more just forest and lake and, you know, that sort of thing, as opposed to like, yeah, this number, this and that. So I've weaved into my life the slowness in what I call non-negotiables. So one of my non-negotiables is to go ride a horse. So I have a horse on Wednesday mornings and Sunday mornings. I don't care what's going to happen. I don't care what meeting you are going to ask me to go to. It's just not going to happen. I can do Tuesday or Thursday, but Wednesday mornings, I'm at the yard. And I remember when a couple of years ago, still, I could like just rush in and be like, okay, people would ask me, would you like some tea? And I'm like, no, I don't have time. And I would just go and ride my horse and then quickly the car and home. And I'm like, what are you doing, Misa? This is your childhood dream. You're living a dream, and here you are, you know, like rushing in and out. What's the point? So I really made a note and learned to appreciate those couple of things that give me joy. So horse riding, putting flowers in a vase, like really simple things. I meditate a lot. Now I have a puppy. So I go to the forest every day, at least an hour. So I really kind of integrated that slowness, because what I've seen is that when you have a lot of slowness, then you can very quickly switch between the states. And that actually gives you more power than just plowing through.
Isn't that interesting? And that stillness, though, also helps one just really distill one's thinking, I find. I don't know, yeah. Just think more clearly, be more articulate and maybe refined in the actions one's going to take. So making more, I don't know, yeah, refined decisions. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely. And it's not just the kind of choices we make, but it's also, I think, the energy you bring to the table each time you have a conversation, each time you meet somebody. And ultimately, it's that energy that will kind of define your route and your success. So I think it's super important that you kind of cultivate that and actively work on that, because it's those like microseconds when things happen, rather than, you know, working on a piece of something for like weeks and weeks, which of course we have to do every now and again. Like going back to my first story, you know, that choice I made in that meeting was more important than working for 4 years. I could have done the same amount of work without a completely different result. And I think that can happen. You allow that to happen when you bring your energy to when you meet people and you have conversations. So I don't think you can do that very powerfully unless you have these silent moments.
I can definitely resonate with that. And that's, I think I find that if I one of my first signs that I'm exhausted, you know, if I'm doing too much, if I haven't slowed down enough, is in fact getting self-doubt and fogginess and kind of not feeling like when I'm in those meetings, you know, a scenario like you just described, not feeling like I can step up and say, actually, I want to ask something more. It's that kind of dripping away of confidence. And sometimes I've learned to recognize now that that's okay. You got to just like slow down a little bit, make sure you're taking the rest. At the same time, I still find it so challenging to have those. I don't find the slow days easy. I think that that's definitely for me. I still find, you know, when I'm just there and I'm like, I'm tired and I'm kind of, I am taking a break and I don't really feel like I can do things anyway. And it's the weekend, so I should be taking time off. Don't always find that easy. Like that's also when my brain will be saying to me, you know, it's all that those negative thought patterns. Like, well, maybe you should be doing this, but you didn't finish this off at the end of last week. You should do that now, because otherwise, you know, the week's going to start and blah, blah, blah. And yet when if I do just allow myself to stop, even if I don't like it, that's then the next day will be when I wake up and it's just so clear. Okay, this is what you need to do. There's no doubts in it. There's no, none of that self-questioning, which I think is, that can really be the thing that holds us back so much of the time. It's just like consistently being like in your own ear and telling yourself you shouldn't be doing things. So do you still get that feeling where you're like, I want to be doing things, but I'm actually going to stop. I'm actually going to slow down and let myself kind of do less.
I'm getting better at it. I can't say that it never happens, but I do get days now where I think, right, I've done this and I completed this and this is good. It's fine. It's good. And then I just finish. But I think when there is, when things aren't going smoothly, and of course there are times when you really have to pull through and like, okay, you have to work hard, then it's really difficult to give yourself that permission to, even though I know that your success is doesn't equal to the time spent. I think that's the biggest sort of mindset flaw that people have, is that, of course, you know, nothing's going to happen unless you do some work, right? That's obvious. But because I have failed after working really hard, I know that it doesn't, you know, like it doesn't equal success. Sorry.
I get that. Definitely.
And real eye opener for me was when I ordered Deepak Chopra's book, 7 Spiritual Laws of Success.
Mm. Yes.
And it came through from the post, and it's this, I don't have it here. Usually I have it on my desk. It's this tiny book. And sorry, listeners, I'm completely ruined this for you, because now you know it's a tiny book. But I was like, what kind of book is this? I mean, it's not a proper book. You know, it's not going to take more than like an hour or two to read. I mean, what is this? That's exactly the point of the book. Just because it's small and doesn't have so many pages doesn't mean that it's not valuable and is not going to change your life. And apparently he wrote it on a flight. So it was like a long flight, but still he like wrote it on like one flight, done. So this whole idea that success equals hours worked, we really have to get rid of that.
How do you ever get blocked? Because there are lots of people out there who, I mean, I'm constantly clients and goodness, coaching myself. There are times when it actually just feels too difficult. And yes, you've got all of that time spent, haven't spent enough time, but quite often procrastination comes up. Even amongst the most driven women, they find there are blocks to their moving forward. You find it there are blocks sometimes to you not taking actions. That's a challenge for you. But what gifts or insights would you give to those people who find procrastination is an issue for them?
So first of all, I also find things hard to do sometimes. And it's more to do with, I think, just seasons and stuff. And I know I get days when I just can't be asked to open my computer. I just most simple things. And I'm just like putting things aside. I'll do this later. And I just cannot, you know, like real proper, like, oh. And then I just know that, okay, fine, just take a break. And then it returns and then we move again. And I think that's absolutely normal. But I think if you let that state, you know, like that doesn't go away and, you know, the moon has done a full circle, you're still sitting there not taking action, then it's, you know, then you need to find other ways to kind of break that. And what I've seen, and because there's, yeah, I've now heard thousands of women's stories all around the world, entrepreneurs, you know, carry women, everything. And it's we ask too much of ourselves. We want some sort of a elusive perfection, 5 stars, golden stickers, whatnot. And we want to be sure that we're going to get them even before we start. So there's this kind of perfection trap that we are trapped in. Another thing is where the fog comes from is, okay, we say we have so many ideas or we have, yeah, we don't know which route to take. But that's usually hiding your true love, your true, like, where you really want to do. Your heart is calling you to do it and you actually know it, but you don't want to say it out loud because the dream you don't want to tell is your most powerful dream. Therefore, you kind of fog it up with all sorts of small bits and bobs and you run around like headless chicken. And that's the great excuse not to really tap into that. So I think, and there's variations of those, but those are kind of two big themes that I see that are happening, why we feel stuck at times.
Yeah, that's... I'm just sitting here going, oh my gosh, she's just seen right through me. That whole thing of feeling overwhelmed because you've got so many options, so many ideas, so many things you could possibly do. And when you're kind of like, you've got that thing screaming at you, but maybe from a long way away, maybe down in some cave at the bottom of your mind. It's like, this is what you want to do. Get up and do it. But that's that's often the challenge. And yeah, what you've just said about fogging up yourself and your pathway by all those other things. I mean, I think sometimes we've gone so far down certain pathways that it can feel like, well, that's why we're not, you know, why we're not taking certain decisions, to listen to that screaming voice, because we're saying, yeah, but my expertise is here, my network is here. I'm afraid to move away from it because I'd be stuck, you know, I'd have to completely redo my identity. And I think that can be something that a lot of people are dealing with and quite afraid of. So I'd kind of like to talk to you about that as well, because you have made these decisions to shift and change and start different things. And what were some of those processes like for you to have to kind of redefine yourself essentially and start to do something new that maybe isn't what people would have recognized you for previously?
Oh, thank you for asking that. Yeah, because that was a really big thing for me. So after having the babies, I still did a lot of branding consultancy work. And then I was invested in a Scandinavian coffee shop bakery concept in London, which was beautifully branded, obviously. And I had a chance to write a cookbook, which is kind of random, but I love cooking. And I'm, you know, it wasn't like that I couldn't do it, and I felt I could do it. So I did it. But I was like, what am I doing writing a cook, you know, like I'm a branding, and now here I am, you know, on BBC Women's Hour talking about like rye bread. So, but that really freed me up. I think that was a necessary step to see like, oh, wow, I can be a cookbook author if I wanted to. And at the time it was great and it was fun. Later on, I got asked if I want to go down that route, become that sort of Scandi bakey person in London, which I decided not to because that wasn't my calling. That was my ego's calling, but not my calling. But that freed me up. And then when it was, when Drewman, the idea really landed, I remember I was so scared. I was literally petrified. And for 2 weeks, I remember I was like, it felt like I was walking like half a meter above the ground because I was in such a shock. And I knew that I had landed what I needed to do with my life, but and I couldn't put it back into the box. It was out. It was impossible to undo, unknow, unbe aware. And in my doer fashion, I then just I pushed out my blog 2 weeks from getting the idea. I was like, okay, I'm just going to start writing this and it's out there and And then I started running those support groups. And I remember thinking, oh my God, all of these people, like all of these people, right? Like people don't have anything better things to do than think, what is Misa doing right now? Like, this is like this thing, right? Like here they are, you know, these hundreds of people, they're just standing there thinking, oh, what a weird person, you know, what is she running like this? Women's groups, you know, they have all this time in their day to think about what Misa is doing. So I was really thinking like, they think I've gone mad, whoever they are. I mean, go figure. But there's this like an invisible audience that we think we have. And I couldn't go to my LinkedIn profile for 2 years. I could not update it. I just couldn't go out and say, I'm this weird women's empowerment person now. And I have nothing to do with branding, actually. And to really, and you asked me about processes. So my process was when I started running the groups and we would do like a one member group and like two like intro evenings or whatnot. So usually 3 or 4 times a month, I would have these events. And I took a selfie every time in front of the door going like, okay, I'm here. I'm doing Driven Woman. And here I am. And then I posted it to Facebook, to those people who were thinking what Misa is doing, right? And after 200 selfies, I was free.
I love that measurement. What a metric.
I mean, honestly, I think it was 100 selfies in 2 years. Yeah. But anyways, like some incredible number of selfies. So that was my process of freeing myself from the previous, ooh, you know, you are known as this global branding consultant person, and now you are doing some weird stuff with women. So get over yourself.
How did you, because you identify that really key thing, the ego versus the true you. And I just think it's such a look at Becky's body language.
I'm turning it. I'm on mute because I'm just like, ooh, yeah. How do I tell my ego to shut up?
What is that distinction? Or rather, how did you recognize it was your ego that was interested in Scandi Baker of London versus actually going completely against your true calling?
Well, it is a process. It is a process. And I am, you know, this sort of extrovert, you know, Leo loves the attention, blah, blah, blah. And that was available as a you know, co-owner of the very small chain of these beautiful coffee shops. And and of course, you know, the thing is like, yeah, this is part of your job and you're bringing, you know, awareness to the brand. And of course, but the ego really wanted to do that. And I think got me hooked on that for a while. And when all of that untangled, for me, it was quite a messy process, really. So I think when we let go of these pieces of ego, and eventually we will, if we are true to our journey and we go through this very difficult, where it feels really, really hard, and there's mess and there's failure and there's, you know, it's like I almost see it as a, you have this like a shell and you have to break it piece by piece, and then there's mess, there's going to be bits and pieces everywhere, and then some crap is going to come out underneath, but it's just, you have to keep doing that.
Or a beautiful butterfly emerges.
Sorry.
You emerge from your chrysalis ready to fly.
Exactly. And yeah, it's a process. And I think we just need to be more compassionate and loving towards ourselves and say, it's okay.
With that in mind, what are your processes for self-compassion? Or do you have, I keep using the word process today, I'm not sure why. I think it's because I'm reflecting on what you're saying, actually, around it's not, these aren't things that are just one and done overnight. Like, yeah, we do a thing, we have a bath, and then our whole life's going to be great because we've shown ourselves some self-love. But yeah, what do you have particular things that you do that enable you to show yourself self-compassion? Or is it just about kind of quieting some of those voices in your head and overcoming some of the things maybe that you hear from external people?
I think this is a big deal for a lot of women. And it's no, if you think about it, it's no wonder that we, no matter how, you know, driven or this and that we are, we keep doubting ourselves, no matter on which level. I've learned level in terms of where you are down on your journey. And where it comes from is the society has, and the whole definition of success has been built on very masculine values. And parts of us have been belittled and denied for centuries, thousands of years. So for you to then go and trust those parts and rediscover those parts, it's a journey. And I think that's what it's all about. You go and rediscover the true parts of yourselves that been denied and belittled and pushed down and, you know, kind of slapped. So, and you can reclaim piece by piece, but, and then you feel really strong. But then later you discover, oh my God, oh, there's more to discover. And then like, oh, can I do this? So it's sort of up and down journey. And when that happens to me, I really quiet down. I meditate, preferably like a long time, like a 45 minutes, 1 hour, over an hour, not just 10 minutes. 10 minutes you get like, you get the buzz down a little bit, but to really connect. And then like it still happens to me. So a couple of weeks ago, I had this like, oh, can I do this? Again, you know, when always when you're pushing to the next level, you always kind of get that. And then I had the message when I was meditating, and it was, you have the right to be here. And okay, then there was expansion, and then I'm off to the races. But it's, I think we forget that it's going to happen over and over again. It gets easier and easier, but it's our job to create that process for ourselves and have the practice so that when it happens, you have the tools.
Yeah, I've been reading. Actually, Amy, you gave this to me, Mary Beard's Women in Power. And yeah, I just kind of went back to it because I was thinking a lot about why do we talk so much about empowering women? Why do we need to be empowered? And it's because there's a void, you know, because everything's been built. And for anyone who hasn't read Power and Women in Power, Women in Power, it goes back to some of these things. And it got me thinking about a conversation we'd had, Misa, because you were talking to me exactly about this. This goes back centuries. This goes back thousands of years where women's tongues were cut off if they spoke, you know, when if they were raped, they were the ones that were punished for it. And then of course, in more kind of modern history, where our businesses and our education institutions and, you know, everything else that kind of is structured around our lives has been built in such a way that didn't involve us as part of that building and those creating of those structures. And I think, I wonder, do you ever feel angry about the fact that, you know what, we're fighting a fight that we should never really have had to fight in the first place? You know, that if we were born into a truly equitable society, we wouldn't have to do this. We wouldn't have to give women extra platforms. We wouldn't have to keep speaking up. We wouldn't have to, you know, find these ways of just being able to show up and do the things we want to do.
I don't see it as a fight. And I think that's where we absolutely give our power away when we go into a fight. When we kind of, I'm writing a book about this, mm-hmm. and I scribble these drawings, and I have this one image where there's this man, you know, holding the power, and he's like, he's the man and he's built this system and whatnot. And all these women, they're just screaming at him. And then the next image is they go like, okay, we're just going to go and find our own power, our fabulousness, our own talent, our personality. We're going to go and create our own party, and we're going to, you know, do whatever we want. And we're going to put our energy into that. And then the guy has been left holding a bag, literally. So this is where we go wrong when we go into a fight. And it is not a fight. So everybody who's around today here on this planet, they didn't build it. It's not their fault. They were brought into the same system also, and they also suffer in it. And it is not about men and women. It's about feminine and masculine. And we all have feminine and masculine inside of us. And it's both genders denying and being afraid to express the feminine. So that's the void. And it's equally disastrous for men. So if we fight, if women pick up a fight with men, then men get offensive and then nothing happens. And of course, there is a place for fight in certain situations, and there's a place for demonstration, and there's, you know, sometimes you do have to pick up a fight. I'm speaking on a really on a like a spiritual level and on a soul level, and how we on a long term change the system is when everybody accepts that they have to do the work, they have to grow up, and they have to find, you know, as soon as women say, you know, this is me, these are my talents, this is what I love to do, and you start shining, nobody can harass you, nobody can put you in a box, nobody can, you know, slap you. You just do your own thing, right? And of course, I appreciate that not every woman is in that situation. And that's why women who are so educated, healthy, you know, in good jobs, it's our responsibility. We have to create those structures so that then we can bring everybody along. That's what I believe in. And actually, when I do get angry is when I see women who don't stand behind their values, who are in a situation that they can. That makes me really, really, that really, because that's how we change things, is when those of us who, you know, okay, if you're out of a job, you still have a, like, resources so that it's, you can find another job and so on. So then stand behind those values and do that, have that conversation rather than kind of hide away and just think about your ego and your own kind of position. So I think it's really the responsibility of women and men in those roles who have the resources to do that work. Did that answer your question?
It's really interesting, that concept of masculine and feminine, because I think actually so many of the themes that we've touched on today, they are not just, they're human issues. They're not male or female issues. And yet, actually, what's interesting is you have in your, just the name Driven Woman, you're sort of coalescing two concepts, aren't you? You're harnessing the testosterone action orientated. Just the very title you've given yourself. I love Chief Doer. Testosterone, that sort of we associate with men, but it's a very, it's also ripples through our female veins too, just in different quantities. But it's very much orientated with conquering, analytical, driven, focus, goal orientation. Was it quite conscious for you to pull together Driven and Woman and just make it feel really strong and firm?
So I remember when the word came to me, we were brainstorming, and I just, there was no analysis, there was no market research, there was no logic. It just, I was like, wow, this is it. That was it. It was not, I didn't want to, I mean, so many people wanted to talk me out of it. So my friend said, okay, your concept sounds interesting, but I'm not going to come if you call it Driven Woman. So, and remember, this is 2013. So it was still, that was seen as too, I guess, too rebellious to the whole kind of system to say that you can be ambitious as a woman and you can just say it.
Own it.
Yeah, and own it. And you're absolutely correct. That part of the brand is the kind of the masculine, because in order to make things happen, you need to tap into your masculine. You need to tap into that kind of drive. And this is interesting because, of course, in the void for women, it's not only the feminine qualities that were left in the void, but also the masculine that were denied. So we were left with a very small patch. We really have to go and reclaim both sides. Of course, one survival strategy for especially women in corporate careers have been to over-exaggerate the masculine, because you had to. You had to be one of the boys in order to get there. So, but what I always say is we've lost ourselves in that track, and then we burned out and, you know, all of this. And I do believe that we can build businesses and be entrepreneurs in a feminine way. And then we just tap into that masculine when we need it. We don't have to have it on all the time. So we need to learn to become really kind of flexible. When is it that I have to drive forward and have that assertiveness and drive? And when is it that I actually have to use my intuition and my collaboration, co-creation and these feminine qualities? So learning kind of that, I think, is what is in the name now. So both masculine and feminine.
I think that what you're describing definitely feels like something that when we, like going back to what you said before about living to your values and actually listening to yourself and saying, what is the thing I really want? I feel like once you're in that space, then your ability to switch between that what you've just described, the masculine and feminine, and being able to kind of harness those different powers for when you need them, and becomes much easier. It's when you're trying to fit into a box that isn't necessarily the place that is very natural to you. I definitely have heard the story so many times from women in STEM, you know, people in academia, in science and technology, have said to me, oh, I had to switch off my personality. I had to switch off who I was. And I know in corporates, it kind of exists in a slightly different way, but it's still, you know, the similar thing. And that was definitely my experience as well. And it wasn't until I'd got myself kind of out, and I've had to push things to a bit of an extreme one way and another to explore and to be able to find, okay, that the right answer is somewhere there in the middle. It's in that grayness, and it's in that ability to switch and not be defined by, well, you're a man, so you're driven, and you're a woman, so you don't have any ambition, like all of that stuff, which, you know, like you were just saying, you were reminding me that back in 2013, the big narrative then always was, oh, well, the reason why there's a gap or why there's less women in STEM or business or leadership, whatever, it was always because women aren't as ambitious. And we would look around and be like, what are they talking about? Like, the women that I know not only want to make money, they want to make impact, like big impact. They want to make system change. Like, what are you talking about? The women aren't ambitious. I've never met that woman. And they want to like make their, you know, families and home life really good as well. And you're like, that's just such, it's such rubbish. And like, who knows where that comes from? But I think I love what you've described there about being able to, of course, we've got these external influences, but, you know, if we get closer to ourselves, then we can start to find what we need to switch between these different powers. Anyway, that's my reflection. But my question is about what's next for you? Talking about ambition, do you have things that you want to be achieving with Driven Women, or, you know, anything else outside of that as well? Have you got plans afoot?
Well, I really want to take what we created to the next level. So, and that requires probably more funding, more supporters, more getting more people involved. My dream is really that it's an app where we can combine the community aspect and so the support and the accountability with some really high quality coaching content. So now it sits a bit like here and there in terms of technology. So I'm seeing as, you know, something beautiful like the Calm app, but it's all in like empowerment, like real ambition in one place, because there's a lot of things for women now for connectivity, but it's like around motherhood, which is fine. It's fantastic. That's good. But as you said, you know, what's the connectivity for women around ambition? That's what we want to be.
And you talk about connection and community, because community was at the heart, as I'm understanding your story, was at the heart of your original concept and has carried on throughout. So something around finding your tribe. And in fact, I think you talk about the doers tribe, don't you? And clearly, just from day one, you were reaching out and finding synergy across the world. This wasn't just in Southeast London that was the tribe. It was across the board. There's an interesting is it accountability and support on a continuum? And accountability is an interesting one, because so often we can see accountability if we're not careful. So it's being accountable to oneself, but when someone else is holding you to account, that can feel it risks judgment and evaluation, and therefore the potential for external criticism and rejection possibly, which of course is counter to this concept of support, a supportive community. How have you navigated that continuum and created a safe space, as you talked about before.
So, yeah, and it is absolutely that it's actually the judgment, the fear of judgment, which is the greatest barrier for us. And but when women come together and share openly, and we come out of our heads. So this is what's happening. Everybody's staying inside of their heads, and they think what I'm experiencing right now is really embarrassing, and nobody, you know, ever has such an embarrassing experience except me. So therefore, I can't do any of these things because, you know, then I will get found out. I will be exposed if I share or ask for help. And of course, that's been one of the current system's ways of separating women from each other, because the feminine energy is connected. It's circular. We find our power when we are together. The masculine energy is more of the conqueror of the solitude, you know, go and bring the bear and, you know, feed the family, that sort of thing. And again, it's not about men and women, but obviously women have more of the feminine. Therefore, we are the ones who really need this connectivity. Therefore, the first step is to come together. It is really, really important. And of course, now we see this, all of these different apps and clubs and communities emerging, which is fantastic, because then we are saying, yes, we can be stronger together, and we're not afraid anymore to do it, because we were still afraid 10 years ago to really openly say we are in this women's group and we really enjoy it. And once you are in there, then you kind of sprinkle a little bit of that masculine back in, which is the action taking. Because otherwise you're just going to be there like having a cup of coffee and a donut and like, oh, this is wonderful. And then nothing happens. You don't get results. So you need that sprinkling of that kind of dream and that kind of masculine angle, which is then, right, what are you going to do about it? And then come back and share. But you first have to create that love and connectedness where you know that you're safe and everybody's on the same journey and there's no judgment and people have to really feel it. And that's something that we have painstakingly created. And you can imagine how difficult it was in the beginning when there was nothing.
I remember, I vividly remember those days when, because I worked full-time, full pace, and had 3 children in 4 years. So I didn't have twins, twin boys, which must have been a roller coaster of extremes, brilliant and gorgeous and exhausting, as you described.
Well, and 3 in 4 years comes pretty close.
Yeah, it was a little. I mean, maybe I would rethink that with the benefit of hindsight. Although not the results, not the wonderful results. But I was working really flat out. I mean, there were some ridiculous times when I was commuting between Bristol and Sheffield on a daily basis, or Bristol and London on a daily basis. And it was just ridiculous, extreme. And I remembered those days when I was able to pick up when school started and I needed to do the school run. Now, of course, when children go to school, they need picking up. It's like 3:30, if not before, which is incredibly early in contrast to childcare where it's 5 o'clock or 6. And so those days when I would arrive, inevitably I would have been doing 20 things along the way. I would always run to school. It would never be a gentle saunter. I mean, some of my friends, I'd see people starting leaving their houses from my desk if I was working from home. I'd see people starting walking to school, you know, a good 15, 20 minutes before I would even conceive of putting a coat on and leaving the door. And when I'd arrive, I'd be in a flurry. I'd have my adrenaline pumping. It had been a full day of boom, 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 boom. And I'd be picking up the kids and I'd be out there. And I was just so, I felt such a disconnect from the wonderful women who had spent their time nurturing those friendships and connections and looking after children. And they had taken a different route to me and they'd scale back their work. And to have had at that time other like-minded people, because I just felt a rubbish mother. But at the same time, of course, I was feeling completely inadequate on my work front because I had left the house at 3:15. And now I'm you know, whereas I had other colleagues who were going to be working straight the way through to 7 o'clock, I would be returning to my desk at 9 and working straight the way through to 12 or 1, which is a bit exhausting. And of course, again, lonely. But is it actually? It was wonderful peace. No, nothing was pinging into my inbox at those times. But again, it was these senses of disconnect. And I think women have been traditionally amazing at connecting. But if we feel that we don't belong for whatever reason, it can not help us in any way thrive. And so this idea of creating and using technology to break down barriers, and I think that's another wonderful we have to find silver linings to the coronavirus, don't we? And I think technology has given us some of those silver linings. And this capacity and to be able to create communities that genuinely are affirming and connecting and building on all the things that used to happen around the school gate. And of course, right now, aren't generally. So, I was just sharing my experiences there, but I think really important. And I wouldn't have considered myself to have had the time to join a group that didn't have the sprinkling of action over it, because I was so adrenaline fueled and goal focused at that time in my life that actually to not have a purpose for my time would have meant I would have considered it a waste of time. And so actually Driven Woman, to me, calls on all those values, although I've spent the last 10 years, rather like you, Misa, I suspect, from what you've been saying, just trying to calm myself down and create conscious space in order for me to be more productive and get more of what matters most done. I've just wittered on there, haven't I?
I think it's a really good reflection. And I think something that you've both reflected on is actually how much change has happened in the last 10 years or so. And I've been looking around recently at, actually all the amazing groups that are out there, all the amazing networks that are springing up, and even just being able to connect on social media and that kind of thing, being able to share stories, being able to do what we're doing here. I think that these things are so powerful, and it's really is good not to overlook what we have and being able to harness those things to come together, because the changes have been immense, and they, you know, that alludes to the fact that we can make even more changes as we move forward, you know, because I'm sitting here going, listening to you talking about connection and this idea of kind of connecting with other mothers, and something that I've always really struggled with is the fact that when so much of the dialogue around women in business, women in you know, whatever it might be, in tech as well, has been up to this point about like motherhood and being able to be a mother as well as, and that was something that always made me feel very isolated, because I was, you know, I was looking on at you probably, Amy, when you're looking on at those other mothers, like who've kind of done it right, so to speak. And that's with inverted commas for anyone listening on the podcast. You know, I'm then looking on going, well, I don't feel connected there, because, you know, Amy and Misa have been these like proper, and that's in inverted commas too, women, because they've got children as well. And, you know, and it's so, I think that one of the great things about dialogue and connection is that we tell these stories and we realize that, you know, that yes, those things can connect you and it can give you some solidarity around certain aspects of your life, but with that, we can still connect around other things. And so I think that just thinking about how things change and move on and listening to everyone's stories about that and connection is really important. I'm going to move on to the final question, unless, Amy, you have any other questions that you wanted to ask before we have to going for a front. We do this every time. We're like, oh, we've been going for a really long time.
We've had such a rich and lovely conversation.
I know, we've covered everything. So yeah, Misa, to all our listeners out there, have you got a top tip that you can share with them?
I'd have a ton, but I chose this one, and I think this will kind of build on what we've been discussing about feeling stuck. So I think a question to ask yourself when you feel stuck in any part of the journey is to, what's keeping me small? Because that's what it's all about. What is keeping me small? And then the faster we're able to look into the truth and see what's keeping me small, the quicker we can expand. And the next chapter, whatever it is, will happen. So that's what I'd like to leave people with.
Amazing. Thank you. And that gives us something really rich, I think, to speak about on the top tips episode. Yes. What's keeping me small? Wow. Yeah, because I hear that so often from people. Oh, I felt too small. I felt too small to do this, to apply for this thing, or to, yeah, to take that next step forward.
And if, but it requires that you stay there and don't rush out. Always rush out. Mm. That's why we don't get the answer. So you have to stay there in that pain and listen until, because we have all the answers. We know absolutely everything. We don't have to go and do some market research. What's keeping us small? We know it. So it requires that you have the stamina to stick there in the discomfort.
Oh, I love that. Well, I don't love it. But it's, yeah, I think it's very rich top tip. There's a lot to get out of that. So thank you for being here. Is there anything that you would like to share with our listeners? Where can they find you?
I'm very easy to find. So it's Misa Mink in all socials, including Clubhouse, where I regularly have room on the doing things the feminine way. And of course, Driven Woman, you should go to the website and look it up and join. You can subscribe and then you get 14 days of free. You can look around and see how it works, and then you can unsubscribe anytime if it's not for you. And if that's not for you today, then go to our Facebook group, the Doers Tribe, which is a free community for women who are ambitious and want to make things happen. And I'm doing regular lives there as well to answer people's questions. So I think those are the main places to find me and find us.
Amazing. Thank you. Yeah, we'll be checking it out. I'm already in the Doers Tribe, actually. So, yeah, you'll find me in there too. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. And you can also let us know what you thought about this episode, anything that resonated with you over on our social media. So that's at Mindstyling Podcast on Facebook and on Instagram, and Mindstyling Pod on Twitter. So do come over and let us know what you think. And we also have a newsletter, so do sign up for the newsletter as well. Thank you so much, Misa. Thank you, Amy. And hopefully see you all again.
Thank you, Misa. That was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you, Becky. Thank you, Amy. It was really my pleasure to be here.
So we can't always control the situations that are going on outside of us, but we can be in control of how we react to those situations. And that is what mind styling is all about.